rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Eid, Judge Bratfeld, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Kiala C. Eid presiding.
Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have three cases on our oral argument calendar this morning. Just a few reminders before we start. We are live streaming today's proceedings on Zoom, and there will be an audio recording available. That is the only recording that is allowed of these proceedings. So counsel, when you start your argument, can you please state your name and how you'd prefer us to refer to you? You can adjust the podium height. There's a switch on the front. And I'll remind the appellant, you have 15 minutes, the respondent 15, and then 5 for the appellant for rebuttal. We'll hear argument first in case number A230863, State of Minnesota versus Logan Hunter Bagel. Counsel, whenever you're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Kelsey Kelly, and I represent the appellant, State of Minnesota, in this matter. Your Honors, this morning we're here because the district court overstepped and ruled a statute unconstitutional when the constitutional question was not before the court. In fact, the defendant in district court explicitly told the district court that it was not raising a constitutional question. Instead of ruling on the question that was before it, the district court ruled that this statute, the prohibition of having a firearm without a serial number, was unconstitutional both under the Second Amendment and under the void for vagueness doctrine.
Can I ask you about that?
Yes.
Did the district court really rule that the statute at issue was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment?
Well, she had a paragraph that explicitly stated that the statute was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment, but she didn't actually analyze the question. She just said it.
And that was in the findings of fact section, correct?
Yes.
And in the memorandum of law that was attached to the district court's order, is there any analysis of the Second Amendment at all?
Not at all, which I think is another problem with the district court's order.
Was there any need to decide that constitutional question, either one of them actually, to make the probable cause determination?
No, Your Honor. The question was not before the court. The question that was put before the court was whether there was probable cause as to the mens rea element of the offense. That is what the defendant asked the court to rule on. And in fact, because the state was
counsel,
not...
Counsel, if you don't mind, I'd just like to press you a little bit on that. So probable cause determinations occasionally require interpretation of statutes. And when you say it wasn't necessary for the district court to reach... And I just want to talk about whatever the Second Amendment issue is, because it's not clear to me what the Second Amendment issue is, but the district court's reference to the Second Amendment. So if the district court is required, was the district court required to interpret state and federal law to resolve the probable cause issue? And if so, did that necessarily raise a constitutional question? And I just want to know what you think.
No, Your Honor, it did not raise a constitutional question. It's because the statute is plain and clear, which actually the district court states, and it says that in Minnesota you are prohibited from possessing a firearm without a serial number. It does reference the way to get a serial number based on the federal statute and the way that all serial numbers are made in this country. And so that reference is important, I think, to know what a proper serial number is. But in Minnesota, if you cannot or don't have a serial number on your firearm, you can't possess it. And that's that plain and simple.
So procedurally, what's the status here? Is the constitutional question before us? If the trial court didn't make its determination based on that?
Your Honor, the question is not properly before this court because the defendant explicitly told the district court that it was not asking it to rule on a constitutional question, and the state also did not have an opportunity to make a proper record. The state could have supplemented the record in the district court to explain through the ATF how you do this. In my research, I did have the opportunity to talk to several law enforcement officers about how to obtain a serial number, and the state did not have the opportunity to explain that to the district court if that was a question the district court had. It's not as complicated once you actually call the ATF how to do it. It's a matter of picking up the phone or talking to the right person and getting the application and filing it, and it's actually quite simple.
So, I think Judge Klopacki's question goes more towards the same question that Judge Bradbold's asking in terms of whether the constitutional questions before us. I mean, isn't the principle that appellate courts don't reach unnecessary constitutional question, isn't that a little different than saying that a district court commits reversible error by sua sponte reaching a constitutional issue?
So, Your Honor, my argument is that this is not just sua sponte. The defendant explicitly said he was not raising it. So this, in my opinion, is further than just sua sponte raising it. The defendant told the district court, I'm not raising the constitutional question before you today, which is different than just sua sponte raising it. However, I am prepared to argue today about the constitutionality of this statute, and I'd like to focus mostly on the void for vagueness doctrine, because that's what the district court's order does focus on, and I rest on my brief as to the Second Amendment argument. As to void for vagueness, as I said earlier, this statute is plain and simple. If you either cannot or will not get a serial number on your firearm, that firearm is prohibited in Minnesota. In the respondent's brief, the respondent cites different sections of the federal code. The respondent cites both the National Firearm Act, which is the section that's cited under the Minnesota statute, but then respondent also cites to the Gun Control Act and regulations of the ATF regarding the Gun Control Act, which is a separate area of federal code. And respondent's argument seems to integrate all of the federal code into whether someone needs a serial number on their firearm in Minnesota, and that is not the case. This statute in Minnesota only incorporates the National Firearm Act. In fact, that part says, anyone making a firearm shall identify that firearm with a serial number. That is a separate act. When you get into the rules and regulations from the ATF, that is totally separate, and that's about law enforcement and their discretion on how they're going to enforce federal law.
How do we know that the National Firearms Act covers the Glock at issue in this case? Was there enough in the probable cause packet submitted to the district court to support that conclusion?
Well, it does, because it is a firearm and this person assembled it, and that act applies to anyone making a firearm, so yes.
What definition of firearm should we be applying then? That's defined in the National Firearm Act, or that the definition of a firearm under Minnesota law?
I would apply the definition under Minnesota law.
Are we talking about the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what you argued in your brief?
I actually don't think I got to that in my brief. I did not get to that analysis in my brief. But I think Minnesota, I mean, I'm choosing kind of the more restrictive perspective from the state, because I think that the state wins anyway. But I do think that you would look at the definition of Minnesota law, because we're talking about the constitutionality of whether you need a serial number on a firearm under Minnesota law. And essentially, the respondent is correct that under federal law, you do not always need a serial number. But the regulations themselves under the ATF explain that state law can be more restrictive. Minnesota has chosen to be more restrictive. Minnesota has said all firearms must have serial numbers. We are more restrictive than federal law in Minnesota.
Counsel, I really do hate going back to the Second Amendment issue, since we have no analysis from the district court. But when you say state law can be more restrictive, is this where we get to the constitutional question? Can state law be more restrictive when we're dealing with a constitutional right, such as possession of a firearm?
So,
I mean, you're making some assumptions, and I'm not sure. If we're there. Maybe that means our briefing's deficient. I don't know. I've wondered whether you needed to give notice to the Attorney General with regard to the issues that you're raising in this case. I don't know that either.
Your Honor, this is very complicated because of the way the district court acted, and we didn't really get to raise it in the district court, so we're here in a strange procedural posture. And we're protecting the constitutionality of the statute versus challenging it, which is why I don't think we need to notify the Attorney General. We're actually going the opposite direction as what typically where we go. But even under the Second Amendment, in my brief, I cited that even in Virginia in the 1600s, the colonial governments were requiring serial numbers for taxation and tracking purposes. This requirement that we have serial numbers on firearms does not violate the Second Amendment. We are doing that so that we can track the firearms and also so that we know that the manufacturing is safe of the firearms.
There is no historical record, obviously, presented to the district court on these issues, right?
No, we weren't allowed to, Your Honor. So no.
Let me just, counsel, did you ask to? I mean, once you got the district court's decision?
No, Your Honor. We appealed within the 5 days. It's a pretty fast.
I appreciate that. I just wanted to explain that. You know, yes. You weren't allowed to. Well, okay. Nobody knew what the district court was going to write in the decision, right?
We were not anticipating it.
Go back to Judge Eid. I mean, is there a record on the historical regulations with regard to serial numbers?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, I think that if the district court, in terms of the interests of justice argument that's in respondent's brief, although I don't think that district court judges should sua sponte rule on things as to constitutionality, I do think that the judge should have explicitly stated what she was considering and allowed both parties to brief it and have a hearing on that, and she didn't do that.
We're not even sure, are we on appeal? The Second Amendment violation, if that was even the basis that the district court found, because the finding of fact that you're referring to about the Sixth Amendment reads, under the circumstances, Minnesota Statute 609-667, paren 3, is unconstitutional as applied, as it invades a connotationally protected right under the Second Amendment. And so it sounds like that's an as-applied challenge, not a facial challenge that the district court found. So is it what would we be looking at in doing a de novo review of that finding?
Yes. Your Honor, I think the district court's order conflates a lot of different constitutional principles and pulls from different principles and mixes them together, which is why it's so confusing. But I think you would have to pull them all out separately and analyze them separately if the court was going to actually rule on the constitutional question, because the district court mixes so many of the questions together. It's actually hard to pinpoint exactly what the district court is meaning to rule on. At least that's the way I felt when I was analyzing her order.
And if it is a void for vagueness basis that the district court reached its ruling, is that grounded in the due process clause of the 14th Amendment rather than in the Second Amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be the appropriate analysis from the state's point of view.
As to void for vagueness, yes.
So would it be inappropriate for us to say the trial court, well, there's all kinds of discussion about the Second Amendment. The trial court did not specifically rule on it. It mused about it, but it didn't rule on it.
If you say that, I would agree with it, but I'm not in a position to say that because I needed to appeal to make sure I preserved all the issues. So I didn't feel that she was analyzing it based on the Second Amendment, but because she made that ruling, I did feel the need to preserve that in case we need to move on in litigation.
It's a strange finding of fact in addition.
Yeah. I agree.
And Kathy, I would love to hear your argument in response to the district court's analysis on void for vagueness.
Yes.
I know you've started it, but it'd be good to hear.
Thank you very much. So the district court seems to premise her argument based on the fact that the defendant in this case legally possessed separate pieces of a firearm, and it only became illegal once he put them together and it was a firearm. And, Your Honor, there is no law that supports that proposition. For example, she also explained in her order that it's too confusing to figure out how to get a serial number. Well, Your Honor, we have a constitutional right in Minnesota to fish and hunt, but you have to go to the DNR to get a license to do that, and the statute that criminalizes fishing and hunting without a license doesn't tell you how to do that. You can call the DNR and ask and do it, and that's what the defendant in this case should have done. He should have called. Even the sheriff's office could have told him how to do it. The ATF could have told him how to do that. He could have done that. Just because it involves a constitutionally protected right doesn't mean there needs to be a statute stating exactly how you would obtain a serial number or obtain something like a license. I could not find anything in federal or Minnesota law saying that if you legally possess pieces and put it together and create something illegal, that is somehow void for vagueness. She also talks quite a lot about how she thinks there should be a grace period, how it's, she essentially argues that it's unfair to criminalize someone that puts together legal pieces, and that's the legislature's job. The legislature has criminalized possessing a firearm without a serial number. The legislature has said we are not having a grace period. That was improper for the district court to opine on that in her order to explain that that's why it's void for vagueness.
Does unfairness implicate void for vagueness?
Well, to a certain extent it does, Your Honor, but not when a district court judge is giving her opinion about the way she thinks ghost guns should be regulated. That's not proper for a judicial officer.
What is the test for void for vagueness?
So the test has to do with whether a regular person from reading the statute can tell what is prohibited or illegal. And the district court in her order actually says that it's clear. Minnesota criminalizes possessing a firearm without a serial number. So if for any reason you have a firearm with no serial number, you have committed a felony. That's what the legislature has decided. It is that clear. It's not confusing. If you don't know how to go to the ATF, then you can't have that kind of firearm. Your Honor, the state requests that this court reverses the district court. The state requests to instruct the district court that this sua sponte ruling was improper and that this statute is constitutional. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anders Erickson, and I will represent the respondent this morning, Mr. Vagel. For three reasons, we are requesting that this court affirm the district court's order dismissing the felony possession of a firearm without a serial number charge. First, and simply put, it is not a crime to possess a privately made firearm that does not include a serial number. The Minnesota statute, which incorporates the federal statute, does not include that prohibition. Indeed, the Justice Department's recent final order makes clear that it is not a crime to possess a privately made firearm that does not include a serial number.
Do you agree that the Glock that's alleged in the complaint is a firearm under Minnesota law?
Yes.
There's only 13 cases that cite this statute, 609-667. One of those cases is a published decision that we issued in 2014 called State v. Salyers. And in that case, we ruled that the legislature intended the firearm without a serial number statute to encompass all firearms. Why isn't that dispositive of your argument here?
Yeah, a couple things. One is, I think what's important about that case, and I just found that yesterday as well, it wasn't cited in the briefs, but it did incorporate the federal statute. It did reference it and says that's what we're going to look at. I believe in 2014, this court erred by finding that the federal law prohibits or requires serial numbers on all firearms. Because as we know from the Justice Department's recent order, our final rule, that they do not require serial numbers on every firearm.
So if that's your reasoning, though, I mean, first, aren't we bound by the decision? And isn't your issue not, we can't overrule Salyers, can we, as the Court of Appeals sitting hearing this case? It's a published decision and remains binding precedent.
I don't think you need to overrule it because the issue in that case was not regarding privately made firearms. That was a completely different issue, different type of firearm. I believe it was a machine gun or a sawed-off shotgun or something like that.
But the language is pretty clear. The legislature intended the firearm without a serial number statute to encompass all firearms, and you agree that the Glock is a firearm under Minnesota law.
Well, this issue was whether a privately made firearm is required to have a serial number was not the issue in that case. That would be dicta for this case because that court did not analyze whether a privately made firearm requires a serial number. And we know for a fact now in 2023 or in 2022 when this happened that privately made firearms are not required to have serial numbers.
But why isn't this a case like your counterpart referred to that the state is regulating more restrictively than the federal government?
Because it still references the federal statute. So if this statute said, I mean, there are all sorts of constitutional issues that we can get to, but if this statute said it is a crime for someone to possess a privately made firearm without a serial number and then did not reference the federal statute, on its face, it could regulate that. I think there could be constitutional issues, which I would raise, But the way that the statute's written right now does not limit or make a specific prohibition about privately made firearms.
Is a privately made firearm a firearm under Minnesota law?
I don't think a court has ruled on that, but I know that people have been charged with being a prohibited person in possession of a firearm. And under Stone and all of the Minnesota case law recently, I would assume that it would be considered a firearm. However, a privately made firearm is different under federal law, which the statute references. So all this discussion regarding going to the ATF and trying to get a serial number, well, if you go to the ATF to try to get a serial number, it's not under federal law. There's no requirement that a privately made firearm has a serial number. So this.
So you're saying they couldn't get a number if they went to the ATF?
So I believe that if someone who has a privately made firearm goes to the ATF and says, I want a serial number, they will instruct them how to do that. They may possibly do it. But the question then is that whole entire time period where they possess the firearm without the serial number, has he committed a felony at that point? That's why the statute, if you don't incorporate all of the federal law regarding privately made firearms, doesn't make any sense. Because under the state's theory,
69667 references 5842 for the definition of a serial number or other information. It doesn't include a paragraph that says firearm for purposes of this provision means a firearm as defined in 5842 or 5845, correct?
Correct, but it doesn't say defines, it says requirement. So the requirement for a serial number under that statute, and it's not what the definition of a serial number is or anything, it's the requirement. So you look to that statute, you look to federal law to determine what the requirement is.
But doesn't the statute tell us what should go on the gun?
The federal statute?
Correct.
That provision does, yes. So let's pretend we're only going to look at that part of the federal statute, the federal code. So we go there and it says, okay, you need to put a serial number on from the secretary. That's the Secretary of Treasury. How is a Minnesotan who has no experience with the law or understand how they're going to do that? That is completely as vague, doesn't make any sense, and that's why the Justice Department has recently clarified everything and said if you have a privately made firearm, you don't need to include a serial number. If you go to a gunsmith or you give the gun to a licensed dealer, then they're required to put a serial number on it. That's what the Justice Department is requiring. Under the state's theory in this case, if my client would have brought the firearm to a gunsmith, the gunsmith would have been charged with a felony because the gunsmith is possessing a privately made firearm without a serial number. It doesn't make any sense unless we look at the entire federal regulation because that's how serial numbers are supposed to be included on firearms.
You don't think you're asking us to read into 609.667 another provision that says firearm means firearm as defined under 5842 or 5845? Because, again, the language in 609.667 that references 5842 is to the definition of serial number or other information.
Requirement of serial number. That's the difference. Which firearms are required to have serial numbers? Not let's define what serial number is. What are the requirements? So then you go to the federal statute. Sorry, Judge Breffel.
Yeah, I need to ask you, while you have repeated that a couple of times, this reference to required under, and I'm looking at 609.667, so the sentence beginning as used in this section. I think that's where you're getting this requirement reference, right?
Yep.
So, and as Judge Eade is pointing out, that has a very specific serial number or other identification means. Okay, it's quoting and saying, as that term serial number or other identification is used in this Minnesota statute, then turn to the federal statute. But this is a case that's a reference to paragraph 2 above, right? 2 says that it is a crime to receive or possess a firearm, the serial number, I'm skipping a couple words, which has been obliterated, removed, changed, or altered.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's
two and
not
one.
What we're dealing with. We're dealing with 3, right?
Yep.
We're dealing with a firearm that is not identified by a serial number. And that's appellant's argument as I hear it. This statute under 3 is crystal clear. It is possessing a firearm that is not identified by a serial number that is a flat-out Minnesota offense. So what's vague about that?
couple of things. One, okay. And the state has conceded in their brief and before this court that you apply the federal law to this.
Well, I think they've entertained
They have not made any argument that three does not. No, they have said that you need to go to the ATF and
it's
you need
to. It's a de novo review, counsel. I know correct. You know that. I mean, tell me how I get to this definition, this requirement that you're mm-hmm. relying on, when it's not dealing with language in three, and we're dealing with a situation that, I mean, I read the state's complaint as alleging a crime under three. So how do I get there?
You're absolutely right. They're alleging a crime under three, but in the state's brief and their argument this morning, they have not made any argument that the federal law doesn't, the statute that's referenced isn't what you look to, right? They're talking about going to the ATF to going to get a serial number, and that is the requirement. Okay, they're not saying the federal law doesn't apply.
But we're going to get back to the statute, counsel.
So let's go. Yep.
Yeah, our time is short.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
So
then you go to three. It references serial number. I don't know how that would not be the same serial number in one and two. It wouldn't make any sense for there to be a different definition of serial number than what is one and two.
So does Minnesota statute define serial number?
No, nowhere. Okay. That's why I think this court has to look at the federal law, and I apologize for not getting to that. I just wanted to make clear our initial argument.
All right. But
there has to be some sort of specific explanation for Minnesotans, law-abiding Minnesotans, how they follow this statute. If all we have is the language, it is a felony to possess a firearm without a serial number, I don't know how anybody would comply with that.
Isn't
if that doesn't reference...
You can't have a gun without a serial number on it if we're looking at three, like Judge Rotfield says. I mean, like your counterpart argues that there's no requirement under a void for vagueness analysis that the statute give you a blueprint on how you comply with the law. It just needs to clearly define what is prohibited.
And that's why I keep going back to what the state's argument is and why I'm trying to have to make multiple arguments. Because if they are referencing this idea that you have to go to the ATF to do all these things, then the question is, well, for how long can you possess this firearm before you go and get that serial number? How do you do this? How would a gunsmith comply with this? If you bring a gun without a serial number to a gunsmith, they are committing a felony. If all you're reading is that it is a crime to possess a firearm without a serial number, it has to reference the federal law.
Isn't the solution there that the gunsmith not take possession of the gun rather than that the law is unconstitutional if it's clear what conduct is prohibited?
If this court wants to say that it is a felony for a gunsmith or a licensed dealer under federal law in Minnesota to possess a firearm without a serial number, I suppose this court could do that, but then every gunsmith...
I mean, that question's not in front of us.
It's not in front of this, but you have to look at this as far as the vagueness goes, or how would that make sense to anybody in Minnesota whose job is to put serial numbers on firearms? It just wouldn't make any sense. Our second argument, our fallback, is that I agree with this court that the Second Amendment analysis isn't clear. I don't know how the court reached that. If this court says that the federal regulation and the guidelines doesn't apply to the statute, we would request a remand so we can actually litigate the Second Amendment issue. I think that would be appropriate since this is a very important issue. But if this court says that the federal law applies, then I don't think there is a Second Amendment violation because it's not a crime under federal law. So I think there's lots of different steps here, and I do agree that the order is confusing and that we're kind of going back and forth on a lot of different issues, but I think that's the best analysis is, one, it's not a crime, so it doesn't violate the Second Amendment. Two, it's void for vagueness because it doesn't make any sense as to how somebody would comply with this law. It's not like going to get a fishing license because you're not committing a crime before you go and get the fishing license, right? You haven't fished yet. You're going to get the license to do the thing. If you're possessing the firearm, you have to physically bring it somewhere to get a serial number. It's very different.
And so are you assuming, counsel, and I literally don't know this, so it's just a question. It certainly doesn't seem to be in the record. You can't get a serial number before the privately made firearm is complete?
Well, under Stone now, if you possess an incomplete gun, you are possessing a firearm.
Right, but that's not my question.
Yeah, so under the new federal regulation, all manufacturers of these privately made firearms have to now put serial numbers on it before they send them out. The question is, what about all these privately made firearms that exist, that are possessed right now by law-abiding citizens? What do we do about those? The federal law says it is not a crime. If you bring it to a gunsmith to get fixed, they have to put a serial number on it. If you give it to a licensed dealer, they have to put a serial number on it. That's how the federal government has decided to deal with this issue. But they are not saying for a law-abiding citizen who is not prohibited from possessing a firearm can't have this firearm in their possession for personal use. The other issue with this idea of the federal law doesn't apply to Section 3 is that this would apply to any firearm that someone's possessed. It could be a firearm from 100 years ago, a non-working firearm, all of these things, if they don't have a serial number on it, it's a felony. And there would be no way to get to actually put a serial number on that firearm because there's nothing in the Minnesota law that explains how to do that.
Aren't some of those types of weapons not actually defined as firearms under Minnesota law?
I think some replicas are not, but it wouldn't give anybody the ability to take a firearm that doesn't have one, that's not a replica, and go and get a serial number because there would be no way to do that.
But isn't that more of a policy argument? I mean, you're asking us to find that, you know, your argument's the winning argument because that would, you know, prohibit lots of people from having these types of guns rather than what the law of Minnesota is, what the statute says, and what we've said a firearm is under Minnesota law.
Right. No, I agree that that's a policy determination. However, as I mentioned, if we get to that point where this court says that it doesn't incorporate federal law and it is a crime, then I would respectfully request that this be remanded so we can litigate the Second Amendment issue, because I think at that point there would be serious Second Amendment concerns if the federal law is not incorporated. And the district court incorporated the federal law, the state has incorporated it in their brief and my argument this morning. So if this court then says, well, federal law doesn't apply to this, any firearm that doesn't have a serial number is a felony, then I think that would raise Second Amendment issues. So with that, I respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's order or in the alternative remand for further litigation and further findings.
Affirm the order. Just what is the order?
Well, the order that there isn't probable cause that Mr. Vagel committed a crime. And I just wanted, if I could just add to that, it was raised below the argument that it's not a crime to possess a firearm. That was in the, I wasn't the attorney below, but the attorney below put that in their memo. Thank you.
Your Honors, I want to explain the way these ghost gun packages show up, or if you have a 3D printer, the way it works. You have a frame and a receiver, and the frame is the bottom part of the firearm, and the receiver is the top part. And I apologize because I'm explaining this after a detective explained it to me. I am not an expert. But essentially, before you drill holes in the receiver to make it operable is when you get the serial number. When you get the serial number, that's when you drill the holes in it that makes the firing pin work. That's the lawful way to create weapons. You don't drill the hole that makes the firing pin go until you get that serial number through the ATF.
So the problem that counsel was indicating of taking it to the gunsmith, that would be purely hypothetical as long as you haven't drilled the hole to make the firing pin work when you take. But what if his other argument that there's lots of people who probably have already drilled the hole that would like to now cooperate with the law if we issue this decision and would say, you know, both the person with that privately made firearm and the gunsmith would be in violation.
So I agreed with Your Honor that the gunsmith should not take possession of that firearm because it is a felony. I think that person should contact a lawyer and decide what they should do. They have the option to destroy the firearm. They do not have to possess that firearm. They could go out and buy the exact same type of firearm with a serial number already on it. This prohibition does not stop the possession of any class of firearm. It just stops the possession of firearms without serial numbers. Next, in terms of incorporating the federal code, I have argued that it does incorporate part of the federal code, but not as expansive as what respondent has argued to this court. I do argue that it incorporates the part of the federal code referenced in the Minnesota statute that explains what a serial number is and how to get that.
To make of Judge Ratfold's point, then, are you still arguing that Parent 3, which only uses the words serial number, it doesn't use the phrase that's defined in the last paragraph, serial number or other identification. So are we required to refer to 5842 if Parent 3 doesn't actually use the phrase that the legislature chose to refer everyone to 5842 for?
So I think that based on the plain meaning of serial numbers and how all of them in this country come through the ATF and they're the same way, that through the plain meaning of the statute, we all know what serial number means. And yes, you can look to the federal code to decide what that is, but it's because you have to go through the ATF to get that serial number, and they're all done the same way. Next, the Justice Department and what the respondent has talked about, that's talking about federal law enforcement policy and rules and regulations. That has to do with how the federal government wants to regulate itself through its own executive power and discretion. That is different than the state of Minnesota. As I've already pointed out, the state of Minnesota, through the legislature, has said we're making this more restrictive than the federal government.
But so, what about his argument that it's not required under 5842, this type of gun? Privately made firearm is not required under 5842. What's your response to that?
So I think that that is more expansive under the federal government, but our statute explicitly says any firearm must have a serial number. So that is my response, that Minnesota has said that the way to get the serial number and what the serial number is, that's where you look to that federal statute. We don't look to the federal statute to determine what needs a serial number because the Minnesota legislature has decided all firearms need serial numbers. We're not looking to the federal government's enforcement policies in terms of their law enforcement. We're looking at this statute and that the state of Minnesota has made this more restrictive.
So just so I'm clear on your position, I think I am, but I would love to have you correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. So you don't disagree with respondents' interpretation of what 5842 means as to federal regulations?
Correct. I agree with him on federal regulation. I do. I don't think that that applies here, and I think the federal government and the state government are totally different as to when a serial number is required, and that the state of Minnesota is allowed to make it more restrictive, and it has.
What's your view on Sellers? Is it wrongly decided, as your counterpart says? Is it dicta, or is it still binding on us?
It is binding. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we will take the matter under advisement. It is submitted, and we'll issue a decision in due course. Thank you for your arguments today.